This podcast is brought to you by Sales Fuel Hire, a platform to help companies hire smarter and flag 13 toxic employee types. Measure job fit, sales tendencies and motivators, decision-making abilities and empathy levels, and make your next hire your best hire. Try it now on salesfuel.com/hire and use promo code MANAGESMARTER for $50 off your first purchase. Welcome to the Manage Smarter podcast with hosts C. Lee Smith and Audrey Strong. We're glad you're here for discussions on new ways to manage smarter, hire, develop, and retain talent, improve results, and propel team performance to new heights. This is the Manage Smarter podcast.
Welcome to Manage Smarter, everyone. We have got a topic for you today. Come in. I'm Audrey Strong, Vice President of Communications here at Sales Fuel.
And I'm C. Lee Smith. I'm the President and CEO of Sales Fuel. And this is a topic we've got some personal experience with, but I think everybody does.
So obviously, the topic, which the umbrella is, gee, maybe if I'm going to hire you, you don't want me to go to your Instagram and see you topless chugging a beer like on a beach somewhere. That is a super obvious case study for what not to do with your social media in the professional setting and what HR is looking for. But there's way more subtle things that you shouldn't also be doing, right? We're going to talk about that today. So what are some of those things? Welcome to our microphones, Bianca Lager. She's got all the answers. Hi, Bianca.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you guys so much.
So you are the business manager consultant and you are a public speaker. Your specialties include organizational development, career growth, and online reputation management. You are the president of Social Intelligence. I love that company name.
Yeah,
great name. Everything about this. It's a consumer reporting agency focused on online risk for human resources. So number one mistake would be what? And what are some of other more subtle things you shouldn't be posting that might not be so
actually obvious? Audrey, let me nuance that a little bit. It's like, what's the number one mistake that job candidates make, the employee makes, and what's the number one mistake that employers make?
Good distinction there, Lee. Yes. It's interesting. And from the job candidate's perspective, I would say that there's a couple things going on. It really all goes back to, well, what does your boss care about, right? Now, one of the issues at large out here goes back to what Lee's saying, what about an employer's mistake? It sort of starts there. And I would say the number one thing is when you're trying to do this yourself, you know, when you're Googling your employee, when you're trying to pull up their Facebook and whatever it is that they're looking at, problematic mainly for the obvious reasons of what are you looking at? You know, do you have the right Lee Smith, you know, do you know that this is the correct person? And also, what kind of criteria are you using to assess this individual in whatever way? I had a recruiter tell me once, well, I just see if they take too many selfies or pictures of food. And if I don't like it, then I won't move them on. It's like, oh, wow. I didn't know that was a job qualification. We're human, there's bias. The bias is, you know, all sorts of levels there, from innocuous that, you know, still matters, and stuff that is protected class information that matters, you know, significantly. So there's that. And that really goes back to the job candidate thing, because I don't really think that there should be necessarily a fear that people have of, look out, somebody's watching over this stuff. My mantra in terms of, if people say, well, what's your number one advice? Be kind online, right? If you're treating other people with respect, then you don't have a problem. Generally speaking, right? Now, you know, is it unfair if your boss looks at your social media because they can judge you on all those other things? Certainly. And so that's one of the reasons Social Intelligence came to market, is to say, hey, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. Number one, you know, all that unfairness stuff, but also just, you know, what are you doing? Are you the Facebook expert? Are you, you know, do you know what you're looking at? Do you know how to do this to scale, to do this, you know, in a process that is cost efficient, that, you know, you're formalizing it properly, and then you're actually getting information that you can use and that is relevant towards your business decisions. And that's the biggest hurdle and the sort of the value prop of social intelligence. And so from a candidate's perspective, when those things are happening and you have a formalized process, there's less to worry about because you do understand exactly what's happening. you know that this background screen is happening, you know what criteria is being looked at. And, you know, frankly, the stuff that, you know, employers are worried about is the extreme stuff. It's stuff like violence. It's stuff like racism. It's stuff like that is going to be, I mean, there's a lot of detail that goes into that, but again, you go back to being respectful online, generally you're not going to have a problem.
I think it's important then to have that process and it's formal, documented be even better, because you may need to actually explain that process. Like, so that if you're going through someone's social media, whatever, and okay, they're a transvestite and they don't get the job. It's like, oh, I didn't get the job because it's like, you found out I'm a trans. No, that's actually, it's because, you know, you take too many selfies and too many pictures of food. But
sure. Or something actually that matters, like you threaten somebody online. Yeah. Or you were using drugs or something that is against one of our policies. So yes, exactly. Having that documentation helps an employer's position in taking action and documenting that stuff. We all know how, you know, difficult and sensitive and unique and, you know, every case is different. Every situation needs delicacy. And then from a candidate's perspective, to understand what those policies are so that you know when you're not doing something right. Potentially, it's not going to cost you the job, but what we see a lot is these types of things being used in diversity inclusion initiatives for teachable moments. Did you know that joke was offensive? Did you know that potentially that could, you know, violate this policy, and we have a such and such policy and that this is sort of getting into that area, you know, let's talk about it. So we see a lot of those opportunities happening as well.
This has probably been litigated to death in the court system with internet law, but I mean, I guess if I say I'm a job candidate and your HR or one of your clients and I say, you know what, all my personal social media is locked down fully. Yeah. And if you're not on my friends list, you don't see anything. And I don't want you to, I don't consent to let you in under the hood and look at it. And it's going to stay that way. Is it okay for, if a job candidate does that, what's your view? You should proceed anyway then?
Yeah, certainly. That's, you're entitled to that, right? And platforms do a lot of work to, give you the power to be able to do things like that. And that's another piece of advice I give people too. If you're overly concerned, you can look at your privacy settings and take some action there. I think it's complicated though. I think that what we find with our data is that about every subject that we run, we find on average 4 to 6 online identifiable platforms that they're on. Now this can range from Facebook, Twitter, to a blog, to your Amazon wish list, to all sorts of places where there's a social sharing aspect or you know, media or something that where we can say, yes, this is the correct person. And that's a part of the process too. Being a consumer reporting agency, we have accuracy standards that we have to live up to whereas, you know, your hiring manager or your potential coworker just kind of Googling you might not, you know, find the right person. So once those things are done, you know, we do find that, only 1% of the time is there a complete lockdown or we can't actually identify somebody online, right? Like there's just no online footprint. There's just nothing. So it doesn't happen too often. Sometimes when that does happen, it's actually because we just didn't get enough information about the person, you know, the resume that was supplied or whatever to us just didn't have enough information on there. So there's that, but I would say that, we think about behaviors on social media a lot. We kind of consider ourselves little pseudo sociologists in some ways and thinking about behavior on social media. What is the intention behind what people are doing? Why are people using different sorts of platforms? There's different intentions behind what they're doing. Some people, and especially LinkedIn, this is a really common thing. You actually have that be very public. You're trying to gain followers, gain influence. That has a variety of privacy settings to where some parts of your profile are private, but some other things, pieces of content that you put out there, you make the choice of who sees it. Same thing. That's the same thing with Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or on or off, right? So that's a very simplified thing. And those are pretty straightforward, but But it's complicated, essentially, and why you're using social media and what your goals are, whether it be professional or whether it be sort of shock value and, you know, narcissism, frankly. So so there's a variety of reasons why people have different settings. And if you're sort of in that space of wanting to keep a very responsible online profile, number one, you know, respect other people in line, even in private chats. And also, have care with your privacy settings, I would say.
So I have two thoughts on that. The first thought is that when you're in sales, a salesperson is being researched by a prospect, by 57% of them before that prospect will take a meeting with the salesperson. If they can't find you, if they can't find you on LinkedIn or something like that, that raises a little bit of suspicion in that regard. Mm-hmm. In fact, okay, how can I can't find you anywhere? Who is this person or whatever? Is this person really who they say they are? Yeah, yes. So that raises a little bit of a red flag there, wouldn't you think?
Yes, and that's a really good point, because I think client-facing roles, this is where sometimes pressure comes onto companies, right? So let's play that scenario out, and you do find the salesperson, and oh my goodness, they tweeted that. There is this outside pressure that's very unique. You know, anytime you do a background screen, and we operate within the background screening world, so these social media background screens go in line with criminal background checks and all those kinds of stuff. It that's where it happens in the process. All the same compliance stuff applies. So, you know, basically, when you think about it, having a background check being done is about risk. You know, you're trying to assess safety and negligence and all this kind of stuff. But with social media, there is this element of public pressure and that idea of, are you living up to your standards? You hired that guy. I Googled him and found this so quick. Mm-hmm. You know, how did you not, you know, do that? So to that same point, Lee, I think that, like, yes, client facers do sort of have to have a sort of professional representation that is public. And there's a variety of reasons your role might require that. All the more reason why at every level of the organization, these things can be exposed really quickly and easily. And I think that that's a pretty, you know, I think any listener who's, you know, been involved, been a boss, been even involved in work. You know, one of the things I say all the time that I heard from a client is it happened online and ended up in the workplace, or it started in the workplace and ended up online. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's involved, like it's happening. It's here.
Everyone has cameras and everyone has the ability to take a screenshot. So if you think you're having a private conversation, if someone finds it offensive or whatever, all of a sudden it become unprivate pretty soon. Pretty
quick. Yeah. And at work too. I mean, obviously all this stuff kind of bleeds in there. And so, and clients that are Googling their account reps and stuff like that, you're trying to ascertain a level of trust. Can I trust you? Mm-hmm. And so when there is some evidence out there that suggests that maybe I shouldn't, and now should I even trust this company? That becomes a risk factor for companies that they have to mitigate and get out of front of.
I have a question about, if you're looking at hiring prospects, is it an immediate exclusion? You're out of the pool if you have multiple profiles, or are what I call a shapeshifter. Okay, today I listed myself as being in Omaha, but tomorrow I'm 2,000 miles away and I say I'm in Miami on my LinkedIn. I keep changing it.
I change my last name every other day.
Or I change my last name, or I put a shapeshifter. I run into a couple of those.
Like running from the IRS or something. I don't know.
Just automatically those kind of things.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It's like we don't even move forward.
That's interesting. You know, that's not a behavior that our clients have asked us to sort of track or take a look at. You know, generally speaking, the behaviors that we focus on, and this is what social intelligence does essentially, is, you know, once we identify people, then we look to see if there's what we call red flag content, which is intolerance, which is like racism, sexism. It's a really broad category. Violence, potentially illegal, like drugs, theft, things like that. And then sexually explicit content. So there are some general kind of like customizations, and people ask for specific kind of things all the time. But they don't steer too far away generally from those. You know, most people are kind of like, yep, no, that's what we care about. Yeah, that'll do it. So I don't know. I can't really speak intelligently to that. But what I do know from watching people's behaviors online is that I would say that that's hard. I would think that's a hard position for an employer to be in as a reason to not move forward, right? Like, what does that really say about this person? What exactly is the harm or outcome? They're just kind of playing around with things. It could indicate like some sort of red flag. But another motivation that people have for social media screening is to sort of document, keep your eye on it maybe later, right? Like, these are things that you're like, maybe I'll keep my eye on this.
If you're the employer and you choose another candidate, do you admit to that candidate or whatever that it was something that you found about them online or not?
Yeah. So when you're having, that's another issue that comes up too, when you're kind of doing the do-it-yourself way, how do you really have that conversation? Are you really able to address some of these things? And the problem with that is that there is an issue to being exposed to your example, like you said earlier, a protected class status, something mm-hmm. that is certainly not able to be imposed in a hiring decision. So in a formalized process, it's just like another kind of background screen to where there's a step called adverse action. And so if you're an HR folks, you know these terms really well. And you have to send people a letter to say, hey, your consumer report came back, some stuff on there that we think makes you not a fit. So, and you have a certain amount of time to dispute it. So that's also another part of this too, right? In your example saying, we found some stuff, I'm not going to move forward. Do I tell them or not? Are you sure? Is it really that person? Is it correct? Do you give that person an opportunity to explain or dispute it in any way? So you how confident can you be in that information and to understand what information that is? And is this really an opportunity to not just deny somebody a job, but, obviously to avoid risk, but are you sure that that risk assessment is done properly? I think, is really the point. And yeah, so, in the formalized process, we see this all the time is that they will get the report and it's not necessarily an automatic no or an automatic you're fired or anything like that. A lot of times this is a conversation you have first and to mm-hmm. say, so we saw this tweet and
maybe you weren't aware.
So trolling is a behavior. You also have an item here to talk a little bit about hate speech, similar to pornography. The U.S. Yeah. Supreme Court saying pornography is what my local community says it is.
Yes.
Is there a national HR hate speech standard? What's the line? What's the line?
That's a great question and one we have debated internally in social intelligence quite a bit. What we've never wanted and intended to be is the internet police, and especially when it comes to hate speech of what is okay to say online and what is not, right? It's all the more been highlighted over this past year. Interestingly enough, earlier this year, obviously, we set out our annual trends report and we kind of looked at data in 2020. And I kind of personally thought the hate speech thing would be like climbing off the charts that we actually found that the violence category rose higher. And a lot of it was people threatening each other online or threatening other folks. And so there's anger, obviously, people are emotional online. And so that factors into this, right? Innuendo, sarcasm, all this kind of stuff. So when it comes to hate speech specifically, what we've done, and specifically over the past 2 years that we've worked on this, and we went very deep last year, but what we have now is called the Social Intelligence Intolerance Database is what we call it. And essentially what we do is categorize hate groups or terrorist groups, symbols, terms, any type of slang, things that are associated with hate groups that have been defined by credible outside sources. So there's a variety of sources in there, things like the FBI, things like the Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League, and a couple other sources that we try to pull from as much as possible with whatever public information is out there. And so when we are flagging hate speech and say, this is potentially, and obviously legal disclaimer here, we're saying everything is potential. You know, we definitely give people the opportunity to dispute it and everything, but we're saying, hey, this is potentially a red flag. This is why, this is the definition that we have. Here's the source, right? Who says that this could be problematic or whatever it is. So, you know, we're really trying to remove our own judgment on it and coming back to, does this match up with the criteria that we've defined? Makes because sense. It's very messy and it's intense. I mean, you're talking like 380 something groups and, you know, 400 terms. And I mean, it's a lot of information. And so we obviously use technology and then a series of human review process to make sure that those things are accurate.
The level of tolerance for diverse points of view in social media, I believe, is probably what's been taking the biggest hit over the past year, 2 years, 4 years, however far back you want to go. And I'm seeing people doxing each other. I'm seeing, you know, if you disagree with somebody on a political, you know, bill or something like that, you get banished and blocked and then all their friends block you and everything like that. It hasn't happened to me, but like, you know, I have friends where it's happened to. And both sides, by the way.
It's intense.
What do you do for your clients? Well, so and this is going to be my last. We're almost out of time, but my last question is: so this cultural divide we're in, what are you doing for your clients? Looking at current employees or prospective employees, where you go into their social, right? And let's say they're not super woke and they misuse a pronoun. Which a woke person views as violence. Misgendering is violent. That's an act of violence. And the person's just like, are you kidding me? Like, I just use.
Yeah.
Are you taking that type of a gap into consideration and applying that toward these candidates? Or is that just too far gone? And
yeah. So we actually learn a lot from how other platforms deal with this kind of behavior. Okay. Because they do have policies that say this is abuse, this is an abuse, this, you know, because these categories that I'm talking about, depending on the level of severity, sometimes those are violations of even the platform's use, right? So, yeah. And things, it's hard for them to catch everything. But, you know, what we've learned from what the way some of the platforms look at it, especially like misgendering, for example, they take a look at a habit and of how abusive it is and threatening towards the person, right? So if there is a situation where they are calling somebody out in a very specific way and making this clearly an indication of abusing this person and trying to threaten this person, likely it would probably fall more into a violent category if it was it really depends on, I mean, there's so many nuances, right? Like human language is complicated. So it really would depend on.
G now, right? Is that how you pronounce it? XE is a pronoun, G.
Right. And so, I mean, I think those aren't the types of things that necessarily are, you know, an unintentional slips or sort of saying things that aren't exactly correct, aren't things that employers are even super concerned about. Because to your point, I mean, that can happen. Somebody in the comments down the line can say, hey, actually, you know, it's they, them or whatever it is. And so somebody might go, oops, sorry. You know what I mean? And so, I mean, you know, or maybe they won't comment on it, but maybe that's what they think. So it's very difficult unless there's actually a repeated pattern and it lends itself towards abuse towards a particular individual.
Makes sense.
Employers like to hire human beings. So if you can make one slip up on social media and feel and get disqualified for it, you're probably better off for it.
Yeah, exactly. That's not generally what our clients are doing, Hugh. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, they work very hard with us to be like, okay, I'm never going to care about this. Like sports trash talking, right? Like, we're going to kill the Patriots this weekend here or something like that. Like, you don't care about that, right? Like, you know, that's not the point. So, you know.
Might even get you the job in some parts of the country.
Boston or not Boston.
Yeah, Boston for sure. Yeah.
Exactly. They're like, don't send me stuff like this. You know, like it's trying to whittle it down. And what we do work very hard at is to make sure that we're putting context and timestamps on it. So we say, when this is. Was it a reshare? Was it an original post? Was it something you liked or followed? Putting it into context and then indicating whether this is a pattern of behavior or whether this was a needle in haystack one-off kind of thing, situation. It's very important to say that. So just because something comes up in the report, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be an issue.
For my last question, I want to tell you that my company, Sales Fuel, has a survey in the field right now, a voice of the buyer, where we survey, we do this every couple of years. We survey small business owners and purchasing agents at larger companies.
Yeah.
And one of the questions that we ask is, what information found online would keep you from taking a call or meeting with a salesperson? I'm just going to read to you what some of the top answers are, or whatever. I just want to see your reaction to some of these.
Juicy. Okay.
And feel free to comment wherever. The number one thing, illegal drug use.
Yes.
Any other criminal activity beyond speeding and parking tickets?
Yes. Usually, I mean, criminal activity and this kind of legal thing is usually the number one thing people are worried about.
Yeah, I bet.
Currently being employed by a disreputable company. That's it. So it's like, you know, you can be tarnished by the company. If your company does something or your CEO of the company that you work for does something, guess what? It rubs off on you.
Sure. I think there's also like probably industry standards for that. So that's pretty specific.
I was surprised this one was this high. Drunkenness.
Public
intoxication. Yeah.
You know, from our experience, you know, most of our clients, that isn't a super top concern. That's interesting. Yeah. I think that it comes
again,
out.
Keep in mind, this is not employers. This is clients' views of.
Sales. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Interesting.
Has no demonstrable expertise in helping my type of business. You get into insulting, trolling, or disrespecting another person online.
Yeah.
And then the last one of the big ones anyway, LinkedIn profiles shows that they change jobs every 1 to 2 years.
Interesting, right? I mean, there's people, you know, who do I want to work with? Who's going to be, you know, someone that they're trying to find trust. All those things are indications of should I trust this person or not? And sometimes they're very unique and individual. I think there's a little bias that could be, you know, explained there as well, just with own people's views on alcohol or, you know, things like that. It's really interesting. So I think people, we're all so unique and we're all so bring to the table a certain mindset of what we think is acceptable or not. And yeah, I mean, I think one of the great things that stands out right there is, you know, respect. Probably all of those things that you listed out have an element that people are perceiving as a lack of respect, right? Mm-hmm. Or
that's a good umbrella.
Issue. Maybe it's for the law, or maybe it's for the public well-being, or for the company, or for most importantly, the client.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that's a really interesting and juicy survey, I think, because that's that it's so true, and it's probably not something I even talk about enough. But you know, I Google whenever I'm. I get prospected quite a bit, but whenever, you know, I'm going to be working with someone, I'm like, all right, you know, let me.
How much of this is driven by fear?
I think, I don't know. I'm sort of an ever optimistic person. So I actually think, and this is my personal view, is that most people are trying to trust people. Right. So we're actually trying. We're like, oh, okay. You know, I'm sure we're just going to see puppies and vacation photos here. You know, we're trying to get it. And we're trying to know if we're going to have chemistry or like we have anything in common. So I think for the most part, the intention is generally probably starts good. But I don't know. I also like, that's just my sunny side up perspective. And so maybe there's folks around there be like, I'm going to find you.
And then down the rabbit hole we go.
I'm going to
go sideways like fast. This is one big massive minefield. And I am so grateful you took the time to be with us today. And obviously everybody needs a social intelligence in their life. So guys, socialintel.com is the website for Bianca and her team. If you're feeling a sense of panic after this interview, you need to call her and get on the client roster.
Yeah, well, the anxiety selling, you know, we're always like, well, you know.
This is great stuff. Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Audrey and Lee. I really appreciate being on here, guys, and what a fun conversation. So thanks. Appreciate it a lot.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on iTunes, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get more great information at salesfuel.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.